Thank you all for joining me today. I know I'm the last guy before you guys being here and hitting the beach, so try and see how fast we can get through this. I'm going to be talking about what we did at 10X over the last year or so. You all probably attended a lot of talks about different technologies, open source technologies over the last 3 days. So this is basically a use case where we use tons of those other different technologies that we've been talking about and how we built the whole platform for us. Right, so here's the quick agenda. We'll just go through the very quickly company overview, what are the different data sets we deal with, what's the high level architecture for the platform, how we implemented our data pipeline, what are the different layers in our pipeline, and what are the different lessons we learned and where we are going next. Right, so 10X, at a glance, so we are basically an online real estate company. We are the market leader in doing online real estate transactions. We are based off of San Francisco. So far, close to sold about $50 billion worth of properties on our website. Our investors, Stone Point Capital, and some of the big names. So Google invested on us last year, which is Capital G. And the company was founded in 2007 as auction.com. So we rebranded to 10X in 2016. I'm Karthik. I've been with 10X for about 6 months. And I used to work for Symantec before, being with big data and data space for a while. So far, that's my profile. And we are hiring, so if anybody's interested, definitely reach out. What are the different data sets that 10X deals with, right? So we are in a very high touch business. So real estate actually involves a lot of people working together. And some of the different data sets that we deal with on the platform specifically are some of the behavioral data that we collect, which are basically, you know, how are people interacting in our platform? What are the different things they're doing? How many favorites are they making on some of the pages that we have, and things like that? A lot of communications data. Like I said, it's a very high touch business. We have a pretty big Salesforce implementation. We have a big Marketo implementation. We send we make tons of calls to a lot of our customers. So, there is a lot of different data points that we collect around communications, right? And then the transactional data, which is primarily the OLTP systems where all of the transactions are getting recorded in terms of who is buying what, and stuff like that. And then, of course, there is preferences and demographics data sets, which is also mostly goes into the OLTP systems, but these are things like, how are people interacting with our platform. Like, what do they prefer? Are they using mostly mobile apps? Or are they coming into the web platform and stuff like that? We collect a lot of relationship data in terms of who knows who. There's generally, like I said, it's a very high-touch business where somebody buys a property through an agent that they already know. So how do we know that they all work together and whatnot, right? So that's relationship data that we collect. And then, of course, there is tons of third-party activity data. So other than what the customers do in 10X platform in terms of buying any properties, they do a lot of tons of stuff outside of a platform. So they might have bought a $10 million property on 10X, but they might have gone out and bought a $50 million property completely outside of 10X platform. But we still try to collect as much information about our customers as we can from the third-party data set as well. So the goal is to build a complete 360-degree view of a customer once they come into 10X, right? Just want to give a little bit of a mapping around, how these different data sets map to what kind of data formats they generally get in, right? It's not necessarily the only way they get in, but this is like the typical format. The behavioral data is usually instrumentation. We have a big implementation of Omniture. There is also some other firehose and other things that we use. And those things we either call an API, and sometimes we also get files dropped in by Omniture, right? The transactional data is generally coming in through RDBMS. We were also making a lot of changes on the front-end application on the platform side to push those information through Kafka as well. So we get more quicker updates. The communications data generally through API is coming through from Salesforce and Marketo and things like that. The preferences demographics data coming in through OLTP, RDBMSs, The relationship data, again, it's coming either from third-party data sets or from some of our data sets that we already have. The third-party data activity, and like I said, a lot of these, you kind of get a sense. It's either an API or a file or an RDBMS or a Kafka. And the last data set is the documents and objects. So these are like, binary files. Sometimes you get pictures of all of those properties that gets onboarded into a platform. You get spreadsheets from our marketing department and sales departments and stuff like that with details about some of our customers, right? So, all right. So what are the challenges we face, right? So obviously it needs to support a mass storage of both structured and unstructured data. It needs to be able to support both real-time and streaming. We have a pretty big data science team who actually spend a lot of time on analyzing a lot of this information and coming up with with a lot of the entity relationships and stuff like that. So obviously we need to support machine learning across lots of different data sets. And we need to be able to join across all of these different data sets that we have, right? Not just from one. So how does the platform look? So we started off, about a year ago. So the goal was to keep the platform as simple as possible. We are in private data center. It's not because of any technological reasons. There is tons of business rules around where we store the data and where we don't, because it's very highly regulated environment, the real estate data sets. So, the goal for us was to use all open source tools and make it really, really easy for our business users who are not necessarily technically savvy to make sure that it's easy for them to understand and use the data if need be. And also, we want to keep it really, really simple because our team is really, really small. We have about 4 data engineers right now who manage all of this platform at this point. So these are some of the technologies that we use on our platform right now. Of course, there are a few other stuff here. Each has its own pros and cons. So we try to use these technologies for different use cases as we have, and kind of insulate a lot of the abstract, a lot of the implementation details from our platform users. So, but we kind of manage all of this under, right? So. It's very typical data sets, technology sets that we've been seeing so far, Spark, Hive, Pig, Kafka, what have we been talking about? Okay. So at a high level, this is our platform design, all right? So at the bottom level, we have our data stores. We have a pretty big HDFS footprint. We have some HBase. So actually, you see two different columns over there. So those are two kind of parallel systems, if you will. But they're all abstracted over some sort of API and UI. But basically, on the left, on all of the Hadoop kind of stack we have, we primarily use, of course, we use Yarn for all of the resource management. But most of our analysis is on Pig, Hive, and Spark. We use Ranger for all of the security. We are starting to use Atlas for data governance. And we expose Hue and Tableau for other people within the company to use the data. We are a heavy user of Ambari and Uzi. So Ambari, we use it for both managing the platform, installing, and on the right side, you also see for metrics, collection, alerting, all of the stuff. We also use Ambari for that, right? And then, On the Cassandra Elasticsearch side, we primarily use it for a graph database. We use Janus Graph. So Janus is a fork off of TitanDB, if any of you have used Titan before. But it's primarily for our graph database that we use for one of the use cases. We'll go into detail in a bit on that. And then the TinkerPop that you see on top of that, that's basically an abstract query language for querying graphs. And you can use TinkerPop against any of the graph stores. So if you decide to change Janus Graph with something else later, you don't have to change all of your APIs. And all of our APIs are written using Spring Boot, which is a really well-designed framework to write some easy APIs. All right. Here's our data pipeline architecture. Right. So as you can see, there is tons of stuff in there. But our primary goal is to, how do we kind of standardize all of the data sets that we get, which are all really, really different, into an easily understandable format so anybody in the org can come in and just use it. Right. So on the left are all the different data sets that we have. And then we'll just go through a bit by bit. But all the way on the top is our transactional systems. So basically any transactions, anything that the customers does on our platform is going through those platform gateway servers. And the MySQL is our OLTP system. That's where all of the transactions are getting recorded. We have been scooping, using Scoop to pull all of the data into Hadoop so far, but we are also making changes on the transaction systems where the changes as it gets recorded to MySQL, it also gets published to a Kafka topic. So we have our own Spark consumers which are listening to those topics, so those data is available readily on Hadoop if you need it. So right now the Scoop is running 2 times a day, but with Kafka we can actually get close to real time for some of the actions that the users are doing on the platform. Right, so as you can see, we actually use different technologies for different things that we bring in. A lot of the files that are coming in, both third-party files and pictures and stuff like that, we use a lot of SFTP. For Salesforce, we have some MapReduce Bureau to access the APIs and all of that. And the same goes for a lot of third-party data sets as well. Some other third-party data sets are available as available through a GDBC connector, so we use Scoop for some of this. And then the instrumentation data as well. So all of this data fall into a layer called block. So we basically created 4 layers in our platform. So all of the data in its original format goes into raw, and then from the raw layer, as you can see, we're using mostly PBX Spark right now to transform all of this data into a clean layer, right? And then once the data isn't clean, we'll go through what each layer means in a bit. And then from clean layer, we kind of derive all the different data sets that the business needs into the derived layer. As you can see, we actually try to standardize on creating Hive tables for whatever the format the data comes in, whether it's a spreadsheet or text file or whatever. Eventually, try to standardize into Hive tables so it's easy for people to go into it. And then eventually, the analysis layer, we have 2 different sets. One of the analysis layer is on the Hive itself, and then we also have analysis layer on a different set of technologies, the sandbox and stuff primarily, and then we expose them to a REST API, right? So, but we also have a pretty big BI dashboard environment primarily built through Tableau, and they are coming to Hive directly as well. And as you can see, we actually expose the raw data, it's not exposed anywhere. We actually expose the clean derived analysis layer only, and that's exposed to multiple tools over there, Hue and Zeppelin and DBViewer. DBViewer is a simple SQL client for people to use. We're just starting to use Zeppelin as well. All right, let's go through real quick what each of those layers mean for us, right? I don't know why it keeps going. All right. Raw layer. So all of the data lands here. The data is not exposed from the raw layer, and the data is mostly stored in its in the format that it comes in. So it's easy for us to go back and debug things. Most of the times, the raw data is, except for binary files like images and stuff, it's mostly text. What we get, right? And then what do we do from raw to clean, right? So all of the cleansing tools and transformation tools happen in this layer when it goes from raw to clean. So some of the examples, right? So we have tons of rules that we've written. As the data comes in, we will be able to just pick up those rules and apply it. And a lot of these rules are built into some of the UDFs that we've written as well. So people, when they start using some of these UDFs, as they build the pipeline, it will automatically do some of the stuff for us, right? So those are some of the examples that you see. Like, for example, if we try to standardize on the column, like an updated timestamp, right? So some people might have different format, and a lot of the different data sets will have different formats on some of these fields, and we try to standardize all of that. And we also try to standardize on the column name. So when somebody comes in and start querying on the clean data set, they don't have to worry about, on MLS data set, it's called as updated at. On the other data set, it's called as updated date. On the other data set, it's called as updated timestamp. So all they need to do is, once they know what table they want to look at, they can always say updated timestamp, and it'll be very standard for people to come in. On the clean layer, the data is optimized for storage and querying. We primarily use ORC data format for now. And all of the tables that we create are external Hive tables. Like I said, the platform users typically have access to the data in clean layer for exploratory purposes. All touch base on data layer and how, one of the things that we want to do is we want to make sure that we're not, we are helping with the cluster resource usage better, so we're not having users rerun the same join over and over, right? So we solve that kind of in the derived layer, right? So on the derived layer, the data is basically denormalized for Forrester Analytics, right? And one of the examples, for example, if there is an Omniture data set that comes through, right? So for example, it kind of tells for a given user ID what are the different actions they did on a given day. But that specific Omniture data set does not have any information about the user itself. It just has the user ID column. It doesn't know what's the user's name, email address, contact information, whatnot. But a lot of the times, if you look at it, people generally want all of that information when they're querying for the data. So we kind of try to go through a lot of the queries that run in the platform, and we start creating these derived data sets based on very popular queries that gets run over and over, right? So if joining Omniture and the user profile data is a common pattern, then we just derive at the data set, denormalize it, and put it out there so people don't have to keep rerunning that same join over and over again. And then finally, we have the analysis layer. So this is basically the consumable layer for APIs, BA dashboards, reports, everything. So until before we get here, all of the users have already spent enough time on clean and derived layer to understand exactly what they want. And then, so the analysis layer is built based on specific use cases. So if somebody has a specific dashboard that they want to build for the business needs, or if there is a specific API that needs to expose any aggregated data sets, then that's when we build this one. Right, sure.
Do you actually keep all of the layered data? It seems like you have 12 copies of it, you know, like 3.2, 4 different layers. That's gotta be...
Right, so, but the data set kind of keeps going down. Like in the analysis layer, it's mostly aggregations that we do here, right? So it's not the raw data over here. But between raw and clean, yes, there is a duplicate, right? And that's primarily because we do keep all of the copy over there. Again, for some of the data sets like Omniture, we don't want to know what the user did a year and a half ago, right? So a lot of those data sets are recent, right? So for Omniture and web instrumentation data sets, it's mostly 6 months or a year that we keep, and then we kind of start archiving the data sets. But some of the transaction data, like, you know, we want to know what if a user has bought a property on our website 4 years ago. We still want to know that those things, yeah, they do exist for a longer period of time. So we have policies based on the data sets that we'll figure out.
What do you guys have, both December and HBase?
Right. So basically, we use HBase mostly on its own, but Cassandra is required. So we started using GNS Graph for basically modeling some of the data sets that we have, and GNS Graph works better with Cassandra than HBase. And that's one of the reasons we started using Cassandra, but we actually started liking it as well. So we're kind of using Cassandra for some of the other use cases as well. On the analysis layer, we basically kind of figure out what are the different, each use case requires a different way of storing the data and modeling the data, right? So like GNS Graph is one of the use case where we actually wanted to build a graph about everything that we know about a customer that comes in, right? So Based on our data, we know this customer bought this property or whatnot, but there's also tons of other third-party data sets that we have collected through MLS listings or whatever it is, but we still want to create a whole graph about this user, and we know this user transacted a property with another user, not in 10x, but in a, you know, through a different data set that we acquired, but we want to create all of the graph using JNS, right? Yeah, so basically, depending on the use cases that we have, we kind of do that. And this is the layer where we also do a lot of the inter-data solutions and duplicate. So if a John Smith coming in from 10x platform bought a property, is that the same guy who bought, if there is another John Smith that bought a different property from through MLS listing to be collected, are they the same? So there's tons of data science stuff that happens over here to identify and deduplicate some of those information as well. So and then, we have the API layer on top of it. So our APIs are read-only, so there is no updates that happens to the data in this layer. And we use Mesos and Docker for deploying our APIs, so it makes it easy for us to scale. And we use Spring Boot for faster API development. And the API also can connect directly to some of the Kafka feeds as we're building the Kafka feeds from the front-end transactional applications. So this is primarily for if somebody's updating their preference on the website, we want to know about it right away so we can start recommending right properties to them, right? Again, so the API is actually, if there is any feedback on the data set, so for example, it could be the case that we identified and the customer through MLS and his phone number has changed. We would know about it, but when the actual salesperson from our from 10x calls that person and they find out the phone number is wrong, they usually provide a feedback to us through Kafka. We capture it and then it goes all the way back to the pipeline. So it goes from raw, clean and derived all the way to fix it, because we don't want to fix things on analysis layer, because the next time it updates, then it's going to create a problem. So we kind of make sure that the API is only read-only, but all the feedback is going back through Kafka that we have. All right, some of the lessons learned. Because we are a pretty small shop, we've been dealing with all of these open source products on our own. Like I said, we are only 4 data engineers so far managing this whole platform. We've been learning some of the things on our own. We actually burnt our hands pretty bad with the checkpointing process. So if you're not familiar with checkpointing, it's basically the name node merges. It's a process that helps name node to merge all of the edit logs back into an FSMH file on Hadoop. So we do use Ambari quite a bit, like I said, to monitor a lot of the process, but somehow we didn't monitor the checkpointing process properly. So the checkpointing was not happening for a while, right? For almost 2 months, checkpoint was not happening, and we didn't even know about it. And when the name node died or crashed, then it came up and it has to reload all of the edit logs for so long. And there was also a corruption on the edit log somehow, right? So, and we had to actually manually fix the edit log file, and it was not fun. And definitely make sure that we are monitoring all of these critical pieces. By default, Ambari gives you a lot of different things that you can monitor, but there are a few other things beyond that. One of the bigger lessons for us is to identify what are those very critical pieces and start monitoring them. We do take regular backups on some of the stuff, but we did miss on one or two metadatas. Systems, but definitely take backups of all of the critical metadata stored. There is a metadata system for every single open source product that we are using. So it's good to identify what those systems are, what they do, and definitely take a backup of all of that as much as you can. The other thing we do is monitor the logs regularly. So like I said, we used Elk on my original architecture slide. So Logstash, Kibana, and Elasticsearch. So we collect all of the platform logs, including Hadoop, Yarn, job logs, everything into Elasticsearch, and we use Kibana to analyze it. But yeah, so definitely go through the logs, have a process to review them, and if there are tons of runtime errors, like out of memory errors and stuff like that, then it tells you something. People are rerunning the same queries over and over, right? Because the jobs are failing, they're running, so it's basically a cluster is busy doing the same thing over and over. So maybe you might need to go in and optimize some of the configurations, maybe increase the yarn container memory or whatnot, the default container memory. So a lot of the people know when they run some of this stuff to increase the memory themselves, but some of the users don't know as well, right? And then of course the yarn queues is something very critical. We have a different set of queues this one is very low, this one was captured, the screenshot was captured a while ago, but basically we have we've had scenarios where one person can actually just keep the cluster busy for a longer period of time and not let anybody use. So we have actually went in and created a lot of different policies and authorizations around these queues, if it's a multi-tenant platform specifically. Right, so a couple of things on monitoring and alerting. Like I mentioned, we use Ambari pretty heavily. The latest versions of Ambari is very good on some of these monitoring and alerting features that we need. So of course, this is the Ambari dashboard. This is another metrics dashboard that Ambari provides by default. You can actually go in and configure more dashboards as well, and you can actually configure it to collect more information. This is one sample dashboard snapshot that you have here, but if you look at the default Ambari installation, you can actually get a lot more information as well. And you can also get alerting through Ambari by default. For all of our production systems, we would get an email sent to a PagerDuty, but for any other systems, you would get an email, and it's easy for us to understand what's going on. All right, next, where are we going? Right, so we built all of this over the last year or so, and we're still working through our way on making this platform getting adopted pretty heavily. One of the bigger questions generally that gets asked in platforms like this is when people come in and start using, the first question they ask is, okay, what does this column mean? You know, what does this table mean? You have like, I don't know, right now we have about close to 400 to 500 tables between clean, derived, and analysis. And there's always questions about what all of this mean. So we've been kind of documenting a lot of that on our end manually. We also have a lot of metadata on our Hive Metastore. We generally make sure that we put enough descriptions on the columns and everything that goes in there, but it's still not easy enough for people to identify what's going on. So we are starting to look into Atlas and use it for a lot of the data governance and metadata management. The other bigger challenge that we have for the adoption of the platform is the tools available for people to actually do the analysis, right? So right now, like I mentioned, we have Hue and we have people using some SQL clients like DBViewer to connect directly, but we are also exploring Zeppelin right now. There was tons of interesting talks on Zeppelin over the last couple of days, and I think that's the way to go. There's Zeppelin, there's Jupyter, tons of other notebooks that you can actually start using. But I think this will be a great thing for people within enterprises who are not technically savvy to come in and start using the system pretty easily, right? So our goal is to start building some other notebooks ourselves so people can share it with the rest of the org, so they don't have to even create the notebook. So it makes it easy, even more easier for them to start using the data sets. All right, so that's all I had. So if you guys have any questions, feel free to ask. And of course, we are hiring, like I mentioned, so feel free to reach out. Any questions? Thank you, guys. Right, so that's generally a little bit harder, but if we don't generally drop any columns, right? If the columns are getting added, then it's, since it's an Hive external table, then it's easy. We'll just keep adding the columns. But yeah, we don't generally delete any column. So if the column gets deleted, there are two things we do. Either we kind of deprecate that table as of that day and then create a new table, or we just populate a null for that column for the future dates and keep it. Right, so we do either of the.
When did you guys pick ORC or Parquet or any other formats?
Yeah, I don't think there was any specific comparison did between ORC and Parquet. So of course we started originally when they started was all using some of the HTTP stack, and ORC was integrated pretty well with HTTP stack, so we just decided to do that. But yeah, so I think that's one thing that I really want to explore is start looking at Parquet for some of our data sets. Maybe it'll be better. That's something that we want to do.
One more question. For your Tableau, have you guys thought about using any other type of like a SQL engine besides Hive?
Right now it's mostly Hive. People are mostly okay with it. Yeah. We haven't used anything else yet.
They're used to it.
Yeah. But with Zeppelin, I think we want to start using Spark more and more. So yeah, Spark SQL. Yeah, but I think with Zeppelin we should be able to push that more. All right. Thank you.
Okay.